Welcome to Rack Rabies.
Oh, dear.
Rack Rabies. Come on. It's Rabies with my personal rouse. Rave.
Hi.
Red Rick.
I hate you.
Why?
Was that supposed to be Scooby-Doo?
It was just a dog. Oh.
It's supposed to be Apollo, I think.
Yeah.
Or Chip.
The Yak Babies. Sex, presidents, and sometimes books.
Oh, welcome to Yak Babies, the only podcast on the internet sponsored by Taft Maps, when you're lost in Taft. My name is Aaron. I'm here with my personal pals, Dave.
Hi.
And Brick.
That'd be a big map.
I almost called you friends, but you're not. You're personal pals.
Right.
Let's make sure that's clear. Well, appropriately enough, because this episode's topic is a novel called The Friend by Sigrid Nunez. This is from 2018, right? So it's recent-ish. Won the National Book Award. All three of us read this book at the encouragement of Dave. Tell us why you chose to read this book, or why you wanted us to read this book.
Okay. I think mostly because it had won this award, mm-hmm. and it felt like we've been talking a lot of white dude books lately, and we wanted to wash out the taste of Andrew Martin from our mouths.
Yeah.
A book about a writer. Yeah, so we launched together into this book about a writer. which when I chose it, I had no idea that the protagonist was a writer.
Right.
And I would not have otherwise.
Yeah, so what did you know about this book going into it?
That it nothing really.
Okay.
I mean, I knew that it featured a dog. That's about it.
Yeah, the cover of the book is, this is a nice cover, actually.
Sure.
I like the design of it. There's a little dog.
Big dog.
A big dog, yeah.
The dog's is big.
Yeah, I knew anything about this book, but when you mentioned it, I had never heard of the author nor the book. Sigrid Nunez is a totally unknown quantity to me. We did some digging. We read her Wikipedia page beforehand. She's a well-known.
Literally 2 minutes ago.
Yeah, well-known novelist. She actually
deep dig.
Is currently the writer in residence at BU, right in our backyard. So
we are going to go visit her after this.
Yeah, so look forward to our interview with Sigrid Nunez after this. Where
I wrote this is Sigrid Nunez.
When I wrote it, I was really mad.
Do the whole episode of dog voices.
Well, let's dig into it. So I think the obvious touching point for us is, yeah, that we had just discussed as a group read early work by Andrew Martin a couple episodes ago and had a negative experience with it. And this novel is not dissimilar from that novel, I don't think. There's a lot of sort of surface similarities. They're about writers. The main character of The Friend is a writer who is struggling to write, I should say. I guess the plot, she experiences loss. Her mentor slash friend and a lover to some extent, like there's obviously romantic tension here, commits suicide. And this novel's written sort of to him as maybe the intended audience of the text.
Direct address to a you. Who
yeah.
It becomes clear as her mentor.
Yeah, friend. Yeah.
At least in the beginning.
Right.
Yeah, it kind of shifts, yeah. In the process of mourning, she ends up taking care of a dog he'd adopted named Apollo, a very large Great Dane, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which was Scooby-Doo, so that makes sense. And how her relationship with the dog changes and as she evolves through grief. There's not much to say in terms of plot. Not a lot happens, right? She kind of dog stuff happens, and that's really the only action. But what did you guys think? Just give me your initial reactions.
I think for a book that was very similar to early work, this book was much more successful.
Hmm.
In all the areas where I thought early work failed.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Where I think this book, you know, I talked a lot in that episode about how nothing happens and there's no conflict.
Right.
In this book, but that's okay if there's something.
Right.
This book, nothing happens really and there's no conflict, but there is something there.
Yeah.
There's an undercurrent to the story that is pretty subtle, I think. But as the book goes on, it's successful. I didn't love this book.
Yeah, me neither.
But not because, I think the reason, this is an example of like just a not for me book, you know, like I thought it was kind of boring, but I also thought it was good from like a sentence level standpoint, it's very good.
Yeah.
And I think by and large, and we're going to talk about the ending in a little bit, but I think by and large, it succeeds in doing what it set out to do.
Yeah.
Which I did not in any way feel that early work did.
Well, Aaron, you even said yesterday, and I like this, that this is the book that early work aspired to be.
Totally.
Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I feel like the things we criticized about early work, among them were how it felt. What Ehrlich wanted so much to be was confident and urbane in its references, right? The voice it's there
constant
was...
constant references, yes.
Yeah, striving for that kind of intellectual, I don't know what you want to call it, depth or sort of, I guess confidence is the right word for it, really, and didn't have it. It felt skittish. It felt sweaty trying to make those references work.
Yeah, you called it nervous, I think, in the episode, which is perfect.
Yeah, like just so really wanted the reader to recognize that, listening to Merle Haggard is a good thing and you have good taste. This book does something similar with mostly literature, sometimes music a little bit here and there too, but mostly it's literature and I guess like living in New York kind of stuff, but does it with what feels like a much more earned effort, right? This is it feels like a voice of someone who sincerely knows these things and actually engages with them as more than just ornaments of appearing cultured or appearing to have good taste. Yeah. I think she sincerely believes them, the narrator we're talking about, not the author, although the voice sometimes seems to cross over. But yeah, it feels much more confident in that regard, which I like a lot more, right?
I'm gonna file a motion.
Okay.
That we're all done talking about Ehrlich work.
Well, we can't avoid talking about it in this case, though, because it's so close.
I know, but I think we can talk about this book in reference to itself.
Well, then one more thing, and we'll put it away. This also talks about writing more competently than Ehrlich work did as well. Its sense of what the writing process is and what it means to work on a piece or a text of some kind and struggle with it and to compare yourself to other writers is a lot more fully realized and complex here than Ehrlich work's version.
Yeah. So, I mean, this book won the National Book Award.
Yes.
So a lot of people thought it was pretty great.
Yeah. And I'm with you, Brick.
Is that true or did a few people think it was great, but those people were on the board of...
Yeah, but I feel like it's got to have enough...
Did it do well? I wonder how it sold.
I have no idea. I'm not sure that's a great metric anyway, but I mean, I guess it would be for a lot of people reading it, but a lot of people who help books find prominence, I guess, seem to, you know, it's a pretty healthy selection of blurbs in the front.
Mm. Yeah, that's true. Well, Dave, you and I were talking yesterday about how, or on Friday, the audience about for this text seems to be that same kind of like New Yorker reader, right? Does that limit this novel for you? Does that sort of diminish the enjoyment or what you can get from it because it's so tied to that kind of...
Yes, it absolutely diminishes my enjoyment of it.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
But I can see why this would appeal to that type of reader for sure. Just like I did with Ehrlich work.
Right.
Like I see the reader this is intended for. I'm not that reader.
Yeah.
But so what?
Right. Yeah. And this is more satisfying.
Sure, sure.
Even without being part of that readership necessarily.
Right, because this book did not annoy me in the ways Ehrlich work did, and I found a lot of pleasant moments within it,
yeah.
Even if the whole for me wasn't...
Like when she called James Patterson the devil?
Sure, I did appreciate the J-Pass stuff, yeah.
I got really excited when J-Pass showed up. That was nice. I felt like a nod to us. What are some of those moments that you liked?
Do you think it was?
Yeah, definitely. She listens. Sigrid. She's been a listener for a long time, back in the page count days.
Right.
You said... The parts you like, what are some of the parts that you liked about this book? What were some things that sort of stood out to you as good?
Well, unlike you, I appreciated... So this book, like, I'd say maybe half of it is focused on her sort of ruminations about writing and literature.
Yeah.
And the friend, mentor, who, of course, is also a writer.
Right.
And the other half is about the dog.
Right.
I appreciated the dog stuff a lot more than you did.
Okay.
I'm not sure if it's maybe because I'm a dog person and dog owner. I guess it could be, but
yeah.
I found that more compelling than the like constant, the writing stuff. It just like the writing philosophy, it just came in waves for me and it got to be too much.
I'm with David. Like the dog stuff and the writing stuff got kind of old.
Yeah. Mm. Like everything had to be so pithy.
Yeah.
And yeah.
I don't want that.
Sometimes it worked better than others. I liked, and maybe because it maybe led to her characterization a little more, I liked the writing stuff that was focused on her teaching to students.
Yes.
And then the stuff that was just like the New York literary scene stuff I didn't care about.
Yeah.
I didn't care about it. It was just, I felt like there was a little too detached from everything else in the book.
Yeah, it made the narrator seem unlikable, but I think maybe that was intentional or part of
the point. I think one of the things this book did very successfully was, I mean, what this book I think really is about is her unfulfilled or unrequited relationship with the guy who dies in the first page or whatever.
Yeah.
Whose dog she adopts.
And right.
There's only, I think, maybe three times throughout the book that she directly addresses the nature of like what their relationship was.
Yeah, she says they slept together once, but it was more like experimentation than any sort of like, at least on his part, it seemed like.
Yeah.
Towards the end, she says that when he visited her in Berlin or something, she felt like they were like a couple, but it wasn't sexual.
Yeah, and then there's a part where a therapist was like, yeah, you're in love with him.
Right.
Right.
But that was really it. And the rest of the time, she kind of danced around it, and she sort of used her relationship with his dog to play out almost what she didn't have, like nothing in a gross sexual way, but in like a companionship way.
Yeah.
With this, you know, her love.
At some point, she even says if she takes care of the dog and treats him properly, then eventually the dog will disappear and the mentor will be back.
Yeah, and I think that was both done well and pretty interesting.
Yeah, I love that conceit.
Story there.
Yeah, it turned out.
So I liked all that. But for me, the writing stuff sometimes bogged that down.
Yeah. I guess I liked the writing stuff as an extension of her sort of struggling with identity post trauma, right? Like this person that she loved has killed himself, and now she's, and also that person was a literary celebrity, right? Or like a prominent figure in the field, at her field. So now she has to reckon with that, the pressure and I guess outcomes or consequences of that, which would probably lead to some sort of navel gazing about, you know, what does it mean to be a writer? And yeah, some of it was really annoying.
Yeah.
But I think that, like I said, I think that was
part of the point.
I wanted you to be annoyed by that, maybe.
Well, and we're sort of inclined to be annoyed by that kind of stuff to begin with. It feels like maybe you to a lesser degree than Brick and I.
Maybe.
Before we talk about the end.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the second person.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of it. And I would say, especially in the first quarter to third of the book, there's too much of it.
Yeah.
It starts to get a little tried. I think it gets slightly more interesting later in the novel when the recipient of the second person shifts. Recipient's not the word. I don't know, the target,
direct addressee.
Yeah, it's not really second person though, is it? Right, like second person would be describing you as the narrator, right? Like you go to the store and you see a train. Like it's not written from the first person for the character to the other character, is it?
It kind of is.
Isn't this first person with two
first person direct address?
Two direct address. Yeah.
I feel like there's some parts where, I mean, it's not in the present, but I would consider that second person.
Yeah.
Anyway, you thought it was too much?
I thought it was too much, yeah, especially in the beginning. I thought later on it shifted, namely the you goes from being that man to the dog.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we can quibble over whether it's the second person or not, but it's this you.
I mean, she's writing, it's like an open letter to her mentor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she explicitly, somewhat early on, I think, refers to the fact that she is writing this, that what we are reading is her written open letter to this friend.
Well,
that becomes explicit at the end.
Yeah,
right?
I think that's what we need to talk about at the end then. So maybe we should go there.
Yeah. So I had a roller coaster with this novel. I didn't like the first 40 pages, maybe 50 or so. I was, the first day I started reading, I was like, I'm pretty down on this. Kept at it. And the next maybe 70 pages, I liked a lot and liked it more and more and more as it went on. And then the end, depending on what we think the ending is, I guess, we should talk about that, ruined it for me. So this is a strange reading experience because it kept sort of jockeying around what I wanted it to be, maybe.
Well, you said even once you got to the, we don't even know how to refer to it, we were calling it twist, but then maybe it's not.
So I want to hear what Dave thinks about the right word. This is chapter 11.
Yeah.
But you said at first you were into that turn, and then as that went along, you sort of fell off of that.
I'm not sure no. I even interpreted it correctly. That's why I'm interested to see what Dave's read on that chapter was.
Okay, yeah, Dave, what do you think happened in that chapter? Or what's going on there?
Which one is it?
Chapter 11.
The one where she sort of changes the story, essentially.
Yeah.
Where suddenly he is alive. Or she,
well, he's not even real, right? Like,
yeah, it's
right.
There's different characters. Go ahead. I want
to. Or is he real, and the whole rest of it has been fiction? Like that, she that says
was,
to him.
That
it,
was my reading.
No.
Right.
Yeah. 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 The friend who's in the hospital, who's alive, who she goes to see, who has a dachshund, is the real mentor. She is fictionalized. His encounter, his experience with suicide to this like death story to become this novel she's writing, right? That's what I thought it was.
And you take that to be the real story.
Totally. That the novel, I mean, she, I think she tells you, right? At the end, she's like, yeah, I basically started writing about your, I'm not going to find it. I started writing about your experiences and turned it into this thing. I've changed all the names. I changed the dog even. She's giving you the map of what she just did in the novel to say that this wasn't a real story. It was a fictionalization of a different story
within a story.
Yeah, made more dramatic for various reasons. And then he's mad at her.
But
I am too.
What makes you think that that's not fictional? within this world.
Oh, I'm sure that it is, right? I think they're both fictional.
It just seemed like a totally unnecessary layer.
It ruined all the pathos of the mourning and grief. It was like, well, this seems useless then.
How come?
Because there was nothing to grieve, right? Like, she had made up a mentor who died, and in reality, it was someone who hadn't died, right? So it's like you were reading...
I don't see that as the reality.
What's the reality?
I see the reality as this being a fantasy on the part of the
writer. Okay, you think that's like a dream, or like, I wish this was the case.
Yeah.
Okay, I read it as a confession.
Huh.
Yeah, me too.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I read it as, this is the actual narrative present of the story, and everything else you've read is a fictionalization within the fictionalized. Okay.
So the real dog is the dachshund.
So the real dog is Jip.
She wrote Apollo.
Jip the dachshund. And then Apollo and her dead lover guy are all made up by that character in that chapter.
Huh. See, so, from the first words of part 11, I was in on this as sort of the protagonist / writer's wish, I guess, or her vision of what might have happened if...
But all the names are different.
This is like the hopeful...
This is just a fantasy that he's still alive.
But why would she change? I see. Why would she? I don't know. It seems weird. And also, it follows this weird thing that I couldn't figure out.
Yeah, I didn't get that.
Where it says defeat the blank page on the chapter break. It's the only time that happens. It seems like some like really
meta-y
stupid kind of, meta-y writery thing.
If it's a fantasy or like a dream sequence, basically, where she's trying to find.
That doesn't make it better for me. If that's true,
it makes it better than the confession, but I still don't like it.
What were you going to say if that is what is happening?
Then that last chapter becomes, or that second last chapter, I'm not sure.
If the way you guys read it is true, then I wonder how does that affect your reading of the last chapter where she's with the dog on the beach?
That was ballsy to admit to the conceit of the novel and go back into the fantasy,
right,
or go back into the fictionalization.
Yeah.
And not necessarily a bad choice. I think that's kind of, or respect that choice, even though the idea of making it into this like weird meta game about fiction sucked. The dream's interpretation makes more sense and definitely is better.
I really don't think that's it, though.
Yeah, why not?
It's just, it doesn't seem like that's the way this book was written and the way it sort of talks about writing and the nature of humanness and all that.
Yeah.
It seems like her kind of like, this whole thing is fictionalized, makes a lot more sense than I'm going to indulge a fantasy for a chapter.
Well, what's funny is that when I first read it just yesterday, I was totally convinced of that. And even when I thought about the first line of the chapter, what Dave mentioned, I was like, yeah, that line seems strange, but I still was totally convinced that I was right. But now Dave just saying, I think it was a fantasy, all of a sudden has made me like a lot less confident in the interpretation.
But why would that be?
I guess you could argue the idea is that she's trying to end this story, and one version of the ending is to wake up from this horrible nightmare, right? Like, the best ending would be if I woke up and all of a sudden it was just this game I was playing, that the person I loved hadn't really died. Maybe I didn't even love him that much. It was all this kind of like playing around with character and voice, and I don't have to worry about the consequences and the grief and the eternity of it all, right?
Yeah, I don't...
Okay, I like it a lot more now.
Well, I don't know. Maybe it's...
I don't think that reading drastically changes the sentiment. I think they both kind of lead in the same direction, right? Because either way, there's a big old book full of grief and a minor escape from it, and it's sort of one's just the inverse of the other, but the end result is pretty similar.
But a minor escape from grief that is fleeting and fake heightens grief, right? That makes it worse, and it deepens the pathos. If her dream is to wake up into a mundane reality where she had written a novel about her friend's experience and had fictionalized and sensationalized things for her own literary gain, only to then have to re-wake up into the reality of suicide and grief and suffering, that feels a lot heavier and weightier. If our initial reading was true, if it was just a confession about a metagame, then that makes the whole thing fraudulent, right? And nothing matters at all. So one interpretation, in my mind, makes it significant and emotional. One makes it frivolous and stupid.
Yeah, I definitely prefer the way that I read it. I'm glad I
Me too.
Read it the way you guys did. But maybe there's something to be said about just the ambiguity of it. Maybe that's that in itself makes it interesting.
Well, that's what I'm wondering.
Or at least well done.
Yeah, that's why I'm kind of pausing here, because I didn't doubt it for a second when I went into it, right? Yeah.
I didn't either, and I still, I don't, I'm, now I'm going to go look back at the words, because it for me, it seemed pretty clear that that was what was happening.
Yeah, I wonder if part of that is because, at least maybe when I read it, before it was revealed what was going on, I had a feeling that was what's going to happen, or at least that interpretation, right? When she went to the prince's house, I was like, this all seems to be a bit too neat. And then I think it was when they sat down and had tea and the wife didn't sit down with them, I was like, oh no, this is going to be a parallel, at least a parallel structure, if not a revelation. And then it got deeper into that and I was like, oh, this is embarrassing.
See, the way I read this chapter is this whole thing's been a story. And then the writer of this story, who's the character in chapter 11, is like, how should I end this story? And then maybe I'll just end it with the way things are. And then, nope, that sucks. Here's chapter 12, the rest of the story as I finish it.
But Dave's right. That second line, for some time now, I have imagined it ending like this. It puts it in her head. It's her desire.
But she could just as easily be talking about the next chapter.
Right, but that next chapter doesn't offer the relief from suffering, right?
Right. I don't think it's good.
Because?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like she doesn't know how to end it. So she's saying, you know, I've kind of imagined the happy ending, or, you know, the less painful ending. But that doesn't make sense to me, so I got to write the real ending in the next chapter.
Right.
The real ending being, I mean, unless...
Being going back to the original characters and then the dog dies.
You think the dog dies at the end when the butterflies...
I think it's pretty clear the dog dies in the end.
I don't know about that.
I mean, it's like a dog going off to be alone and it's not moving.
It's not moving. It hardly ever moves. It's a Great Dane.
I mean, I think either the dog dies in that moment or that dog is on its deathbed.
Like, sure, the dog is definitely on its way out. She's written
about it. I think it dies on page.
Time and time again, yeah. I don't see this as a moment where the dog dies. I don't know if that affects anything as far as your reading is concerned, but...
I don't know. She talks about how he's a butterfly hunter and then they just land on him and he doesn't do anything. Yeah, I don't know. That really seems like a dog is dying situation. But it doesn't really matter, I don't think. I think what matters is that chapter follows chapter 11.
Yeah. In Dave's reading, that's the actual ending, right? That's the only way
it can really end.
Because that's the story. And the chapter 11 is just the... It's like Brazil, right? Remember thinking of Brazil where it's like they escape and then the reality is he's actually in the re-education center with, Michael Palin. Like, you think he's... got the girl and escaped the society and they're going to go to this like beautiful world together, but in actuality he's imprisoned and having his mind erased and turned into a compliant citizen. So here it's like you think for a second maybe she's actually escaped this grief by just being a shitty person. Like, she'd be willing to trade her reputation and her name as a friend just to have this person back alive and not have the consequences of his suicide. But she can't, because the reality is that it was suicide.
Right, yeah. What if, well, let's do both. What if chapters 11 and 12 were flip-flopped, and what if chapter 12 didn't exist at all?
Yeah.
What would that do to you?
Well, if they were flip-flopped, it would be my interpretation, right? Like, you couldn't have it.
It would also
be the original one.
Very gimmicky, and like,
yeah.
That would be like a trick ending that would not work, I don't think.
Yeah, totally.
What if chapter 12 were not in existence? What if she ended it after?
Yeah, if it ends there,
chapter?
Then I don't think... It's maybe more ambiguous whether it's what Brick and I originally thought versus what you thought. With chapter 12, that makes it more secure that I think that's it's the fantasy.
Yeah. So I have changed your life.
You really have. Yeah.
No, I mean, this conversation they have in 11 describes the rest of the book.
In what way?
Here's what I learned from Christopher Isherwood about turning a real person into a fictional character. It's like when you fall in love, he says. The fictional character is like the beloved, always extraordinary, never just another person. So you leave out the details and how that person is just like every other human being. Instead, you take what you find exciting or intriguing about them, the special things that made you want to write about them in the first place, and you exaggerate those. I know everyone wants to be Italian, but ever since I've known you, you've always seemed like a Brit to me, right? So she's describing everything that's happened.
What she had done.
Right.
Right. But so you and I first read that as she's describing what she had done and confessing to her crime of being a shabby novelist, right?
Yeah.
Whereas Dave's interpretation is that is an attempt to rationalize or to escape from the reality of what actually happened. So
I don't think it tracks. I don't.
But can't you imagine the narrator thinking, oh, if only this was just a bad novel I had written, right? And yeah, I changed his name, and actually he's not English. He's some like schlubby guy. He tried to kill himself, but he didn't succeed. He has a dachshund, not a Great Dane. You know, all these things actually aren't real. The things that I'm suffering and currently experiencing now are just the life of this novel I wrote, and I can stop writing it and wake up and go away from it. Like, that would be a wish fulfillment, right? It would take away all the pain and suffering. She's trying to end her novel without to escape from it, but she can.
Because the guy's still dying in the hospital.
I don't get the sense that he's dying. No, he's back home, I think.
Yeah.
I thought she was visiting him in the hospital.
No.
No, it's his apartment.
She did, I think, but no, he's back home now. Everything, in theory, is fine.
He attempted suicide and hadn't worked. She was the only person to visit him in the hospital, and now they're at his apartment with his wife, kind of in absentia.
I mean, it's open to interpretation. I don't think that we're supposed to come away believing or... I think the ambiguity is purposeful on her part. And just the fact that we've been talking about it this long and have differing viewpoints is in itself
I don't know the answer to this, but I feel like this is like the key to it.
Yeah. I don't even know what that means.
Defeat the blank page.
Defeat the blank page is written... So all the chapters have a blank page between them.
Right.
And then between chapters 11 and 12, the blank page says... Defeat the blank page in huge letters.
Yeah. I don't know.
To me, that means, no, you've got to write a real ending.
Yeah, you have to engage with reality. You have to talk about what actually happened.
Yeah, I have to finish this horrible story from my life.
Right.
I
can't live in a dream.
I can't just quit after this fantasy that I wrote.
It doesn't say,
right?
No, live in reality. It says, write a fucking ending.
Right. But if that's the reality, if that's her reality, then it's both. I have to keep... writing about this reality, even though I would love to end the book here on this beautiful fantasy that my friend is still alive.
Or if the blank page is not writing about or not engaging with your feelings and suffering, defeating it is engaging with it and taking it seriously and finishing the novel, right? That could be what it means. I don't know. I don't know what that means at all. That's,
I don't know.
Probably weird. But if...
I will say, either way, I don't like chapter 11.
Well,
so that's interesting. So if chapter 11 didn't exist, but chapter 12 is stayed what it is now, you would have enjoyed this book in the ending better.
Yeah, I don't think it would have made me enjoy the book more, but I think either of those interpretations for me takes away from
the book. Can you talk more about that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what else Dave says, what I already did.
Are you just irritated that it's not...
I think if chapter 11 is like a weird fantasy... That pushes it too far into annoying writer territory for me, and I don't like it. If it's the way that you and I read it, it's also pretty fucking deep into annoying writer territory.
Yes.
And it seems like that sort of asking you to rethink the structure of the book at the end of the book is the kind of book this book's trying to be. So I'm more inclined to think that's it. But either way, I don't really like it, and... frankly, I would have just liked it just to be the book that I thought it was for 190 pages and then end.
So regardless of which it is, you find it gimmicky.
I think, I guess regardless of which it is, I find it gimmicky. And up until that point, you know, I was pretty sure in my, this is a pretty good book. The story's pretty good. It's not really for me because it's kind of boring.
Yeah.
But it's fine. And then when you hit that chapter, I think either way it's a gimmick. And either way I don't like it.
Right. I think you're right about that. It does alter the chemistry of the novel because it makes it more writerly or showy a bit.
You don't like it because it's gimmicky or because it's a gimmick that you feel didn't land for you?
Both, I guess. I'm not a huge gimmick and twist person. Okay. And if they do, they need to be thoroughly prefaced and foreshadowed. Like, there needs to be all the things there that you're not noticing, and then you go back and then you kind of notice it. And I'm not sure I even like that because it just... I think it cheapens the thing, but...
Right. I think what made me upset when I first interpreted, I guess, the way that I did initially was it seemed out of character with the rest of the book. And it seemed like this was a book that was pretty sincere beforehand, and now to all of a sudden get into this meta-trickery felt really like a betrayal, which makes it more interesting that I really went whole hog in that interpretation. And then Dave's interpretation, which I'm increasingly think is the case.
Or maybe you want it to be the case.
Yeah.
Well, it definitely makes it a better book, right? Yeah. It also makes more sense. It keeps with the... feeling and the voice, which is sincere and grieving and using literature and writing as a way to deal with or try to manage that grief. So I can see writing a fantasy where the things that happened didn't actually happen and are just a soap opera version of your life would be comforting to a novelist like this potentially. Well, I liked it. It really changes my whole take on this book.
It made for a good discussion, that's for sure.
It really did, and I guess I wonder about my reading now. I feel like I should have done a more careful job.
Or you want to read it again?
Not really.
Yeah, I mean, there's still, I don't want to read it again either, but I'm glad we had different interpretations of it
for
this discussion, because otherwise it feels like, for a while I was thinking, all right, well, we're just going to sit around for 10 minutes saying I don't like books about writers again, which is, you know, ground we've covered so much before. So I'm glad something happened that was worthy of discussion, a deeper discussion.
Yeah, definitely. And even on that note of books about writers, if this is a... this is a book of writers that I think was successful, or in that regard, right? Maybe not a book that I want to read ever again, or that I wouldn't have picked up for myself, or, you know, isn't necessarily the kind of thing that I want to have written all the time. But I thought it did that job very well.
Yeah,
was,
as far as novels about writers, this probably is one of my favorite ones.
Yeah, right.
Sadly.
Yeah. What else that has a dog in it, too?
Sure.
That sort of changes things. Okay, any last thoughts on The Friend?
Take us out, Scooby.
Well.
Okay. Rawls on Twitter. Rack Babies at...
at RackBabies. I gotta get into it. Email us at yakbabiespodcast@gmail.com. Patreon.com/yakbabies is where our bonus content lives, and there's a lot of it. I would say every week there's bonus episodes on Patreon, unused audio, games we're playing that are fun and weird, and there's an author draft recently that also had a power hour behind it. There's just a lot of really fun things going on there. For $1 a month, you can get access to all those Patreon goodies. So check it out. Give $1 one month, listen to all of them, and then cancel it. That's fine. I just want that dollar. Figure it out. Anyway, until then, yak babies, yak out.
Figure it out for yourselves. I need to pee. Figure it out. This is great. You want to redo that? Let me be your heroine, baby. I can love you till you're high. Love you through the break of day. Thought love was a special fix to ease a worried mind. I thought it was a magic trick to make everything alright. They say you can never save someone who's intent to wander lost. They say never touch someone whose warmth so quickly frosts. So much to one who lightly shrugs it off.
Yak Babies would like to send an extra thank you to everyone who listens regularly, and especially to those who have supported on Patreon, past and present, including Michael, Bonnie, and William Howard Taft.